Hi, everybody. My name is Nora Peel. I'm the Deputy Director of the Boston Book Festival. How many of you are attending the BBF for the first time today? That's awesome. Welcome. I hope you're attending other sessions besides this one, but if not, that's fine too. If you came here today because Becky and Adam are already your favorite authors, or because you're hoping to discover a new favorite, we hope you'll consider supporting our organization by becoming a member or by making a donation in any amount. The festival might be free to attend, but it's not free to produce. And please know that donations of any amount can help the festival growing, thriving, and free for all. Okay, this is a YA session, which means it's supposedly for teens. And I do see a lot of young people in the audience today, which is great, but we all know that a lot of YA books are read by adults. So can I see a show of hands of people who are already 18 or who will be 18 by election day? Awesome. Okay, I might not have as big a platform as Taylor Swift, but it's rare that I get to talk to this many people just days before the voter registration deadline, which is this coming Wednesday. It's this Wednesday, October 17th in Massachusetts, so if you're not already registered to vote, please take a few moments to do that within the next few days, and then vote in November. I know you're all here to see Becky and Adam, but before I turn things over, I just want to introduce the fabulous moderator for this session, Kim Parker. Kim's a passionate educator and an advocate, and she's been a wonderful advisor for our youth programming. Thanks, Kim.
Welcome, Nora. Thank you. I am so excited to be talking with Becky and Adam today. And before we begin, I know that Nora was doing lots of hand raising, but I'm just curious to know how many in here have read something by Becky or Adam? Oh, I love it. Okay, and just real quick to shout them out, what's your favorite book?
I heard nothing.
My goodness. Okay, yeah. I heard it all. Love it.
Yeah.
All right, so today we're going to be talking about their new book, What If It's Us? And so I'm going to talk really quickly just to introduce them. We know that they are New York Times bestselling authors, and we're just going to get into the book. And so I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit first about how you two met.
Yeah, first of all, thank you all so much for coming out today to celebrate What If It's Us and for supporting the festival. We really appreciate it. Becky and I came to meet in online December 2013 when our literary agent, Brooke Sherman, sold our respective debut novels, More Happy Than Not and Simon versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda, in the same week. And then they were announced like days apart. We took to email, like congratulating each other, like just expressing like total enthusiasm for each other's books, and we just like traded manuscripts before they were even edited by our editors, and we just quickly fell in love with each other's stories.
And then you know, after that, so first we had to like email each other and gush about each other's books, and that quickly moved into like oversharing, really personal, like very quickly moved into oversharing.
Turns out we're both like super open like books, like almost aggressively.
To a fault. So we had reached that stage of friendship where, and keep in mind, we had never met in person. We'd known each other for like less than 2 months. And we were like doing the deep dive into the most embarrassing dating stories from like our early 20s, and just, you know, in my case, wasn't doing a whole lot of dating, so they were more like my like pining stories and my crush stories. And one particular story that ended up being significant was something that happened. It was in my early 20s, and I had gone to a coffee shop and met a boy wearing like rectangular glasses, as you do at a coffee shop, and we made eye contact, and that, like, for me, that, like, max out my game and yeah. my move, so.
That was her move.
That was
like,
it.
Like, looking at him was her move.
I did it for, like, a second, and yeah. that was props to me, and I, and so then I took to Craigslist, and so does anybody in here, like, show of hands, does anybody know what Craigslist missed connections are? Okay, so a couple people.
For those who don't, you're in for some
you
fun.
You are
right
in
now.
For it, yeah. I highly recommend just exploring a little bit. Not safe for work, but sometimes safe for work, like in my case it was. But yeah, so I put a misconnection out there. And what that is it's like a personal ad meets a lost cat ad.
And but like for a human.
For a human. Yeah. For a human, yeah. yeah. And you like describe memorable details about that person or the encounter that you had, and your hope is that, you know, the universe is gonna give you a second chance. So you're hoping that they're gonna like get onto Craigslist themselves and read your post and remember you, and maybe like that's why they got on Craigslist, because they were looking for you.
Yeah.
That was some good eye contact. Yeah. And yeah, so I did that, and it turned out not romantic. It turned out gross and yeah. and also not safe for work.
Yeah.
And I'm not gonna necessarily get into that because I feel like we're in a church.
Yeah. definitely like not Prince Charming that like reached yeah. out to Becky, but like there's still no. that sort of like romantic component of the story that I was like, yo, how dope would it be if we like did like a misconnections like YA novel, and from there on we came to develop Arthur and Ben, who are the boys that What If It's Us is centered around.
Yes, and I fell in love with Arthur and Ben, and so I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit about who they are as young people.
Yeah, so Ben is a tall, white passing Puerto Rican who loves video games and grew up very poor and is in summer school. Just the one time I was in summer school, three times. I don't like science, it turns out. But and yeah, he's just getting out of a relationship with this dude Hudson, who you know, kind of unexpectedly broke his heart and sort of, as a result, kind of made Ben feel sort of very disenfranchised about the idea of like young romance, and yeah, so he's a bit of a battered dreamer at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And Arthur is like, you know, like short Jew with ADHD and no chill and no game, you know, this is a kid who lives in Georgia, so he's only in New York for the summer. He is a Broadway fanatic, and he has these really big, like, romantic ideas about love and relationships and about New York, and a lot of that is informed by Broadway musicals. And so, like, when he comes onto the scene, like, you know, the minute that plane touches down in New York, like, he is, like, looking all around. He knows he's about to have, like, the summer of his life. He's expecting, like, big romance, you know, big moments, Statue of Liberty. Like,
Hamilton, yeah.
Front row Hamilton, yeah. So.
I was curious about Hamilton. It comes up over and over again. I was not mad at that at all. And so I'm wondering, just as an aside, do you both love Hamilton?
So yeah. It's funny, like,
yes.
Becky is, like, big on Hamilton. I was very late to the game. Like, I saw everybody talking about it, like, on Twitter and, like, the few occasions I was on Tumblr. And I was just like, oh, it's cool. I was like, what is this about, like, a president or something? Very ignorant. Becky was like, yeah, I'm thinking about coming to New York to see Hamilton. I was like, oh, like, I guess I would go if you, like, you need someone to go with you. Like, I had no idea, like, the epicness of, like, this show. And so Becky went in, like, fully, you know, knowing, all, like, all the lyrics or whatever, and I was just like, wait, this is, like, history with rap? Like, I knew nothing, and I walked out, like, obsessed and, like, crying in the middle of the show. So, yeah, that's how it made its way into What If It's Us.
I love it. One of the things I was struck by was the complex nature of the friendships that are in the book. And I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about what that meant to write really complex characters who are cisgender and queer, and they're affectionate also.
I'm gonna defer to you, because the Ben and Dylan thing is like an Adam masterpiece.
Yeah, so thanks. Yeah. It's a masterpiece. Can you blurb our own book? Right. Is that a thing? Ben, his best friend is Dylan, is inspired by one of our best friends, David Arnold, who's an author too. He wrote Mosquito Land and Strange Fascinations of Noah Hypnotic. And, Dylan is this, like, cisgendered, like, straight dude. And he and Ben are, like, best friends. They've been best friends, like, since they were kids. And the comfort that I feel with David is, like, not, it goes beyond an ally, you know? Like, I feel like I can, like, change in front of this person, and it's like not a big deal. Like, no one has to call no homo or whatever, and that may seem kind of funny, but it actually is like so huge, you know, to feel so comfortable around someone that they're not viewing you as like this gay guy who must be lusting after you, you know. It's just like he's like a brother to me. Like, he's like one of those friends who I met through publishing that I was like, oh, when I get married, like, he's gonna be at my wedding party, you know. I didn't get to experience a friendship like that as a teenager because I wasn't out yet. So being able to write about it now is sort of like revisiting what that could have felt like.
And I do like, I think both sets, both Ben and Arthur, have friends who go through their own stuff and they have to figure out like how to make their way back to each other. And I wonder how you sort of work through that on your own, or figured out how to make the characters go through
that. I mean, I think a lot of that also just comes down to, you don't only want your primary narrator to be the only character whose story is important. Like, everyone has their own lives, and everyone is the main character of their own story, you know? So you have to sort of respect the secondary characters of their own respective journeys as well. And so we thought a lot about, like, okay, well, what are Arthur's best friends, like Ethan and Jesse, going through? Like, what's going on with, like, Ben's former best friend, Harriet, who has taken more of the side of, like, Ben's ex, Hudson, when they all used to be this, like, quartet, you know? And it's just really keeping in mind what is sort of most important to them and how they're, like, butting heads against each other and what it would take to bring them back to connect.
Yeah, and I, like, in general, I love it when my characters can surprise me at some point during the writing process, but I really love it when my secondary characters surprise me, especially when that means that I'm, like, so deep into the head of the point of view character for whatever part of the process that, you know, it's just, like, you know the secondary characters are up to something and you can, like, feel it. And then you have to work through what that is almost like alongside your character. And I think, I know for me, it's funny with this book, like, we both ended up, right, you know, like, I wrote Dylan, I wrote Hudson, I wrote, you know, and, you know, and Adam wrote Ethan and Jesse. But, you know, for the most part, Ethan and Jesse, because they're Arthur's friends, those were really, you know, my little nuts to crack. And it was fun trying to, like, figure them out. And, you know, both... just who they are in general, and then also what they're dealing with during this story.
I love the idea of the do-over, right? There's lots of do-overs in this book, and I just wish that was sort of real for me. Yeah. And so I was thinking... Like,
Don't we all?
Right? So, yeah. Adam, it's funny you say that, because I am wondering, is there something... If you could have a do-over of something in your life, and for you, Becky, what would it be?
I would have liked to have been able to come out sooner. Like I came out when I was 19, and, you know, like, I wish I'd been able to sort of be in position to have done that at a much earlier age, you know, like, not even just as a teen, like, as a kid, you know, like, it's really incredible seeing stories in the media today where kids who are, like, under 10 years old are, like, sort of well aware of their identity. Like, I mean, when I came out to my family, there was no surprise. Like, I mean, people were kind of, like, were very much expecting it. Just because of the way they observed me as a kid, and, you know, and I'm sure a lot of that stuff is, like, kind of cliche and, like, could have easily just been mistaken, but, like, yeah, I would have liked to have, you know, not had that sort of, like, suffocation throughout, like, most of my life.
I think I love the idea of do-overs in theory, but like when I start to think about applying that to my own life, I get really in my head about it, and then I'm like, you know, I want to say I would want to be more comfortable with my body at a younger age, but at the same time, I feel like everything that I kind of had to process around that is such an important part of like who I am. And the books that I write, and just, you know, and the way that I parent, you know, that I don't know, like, it's like, I'm glad that I'm, you know, I'm like on the other side of like certain moments in my life. It's hard to imagine wanting to have a do-over and not knowing kind of what my life would look like now if some of those earlier things had kind of gone down differently.
So I told Becky and Adam this morning that I was up at 5 crying as the book ended. And so it makes, right, and I had been, and it wasn't that I was cramming the book, it was just that I found it so, I was living with the character so much that I didn't want it to end, so I would sort of let it linger. And I know that there are the Becky endings and the Adam endings. And so I'm really curious, audience, which one do you prefer? Do you prefer the Becky ending? Show of hands.
This is like loaded.
And yeah. Everyone else prefers the Adam ending? Show of hands. Okay, and the rest of people have, so it's about even, actually. But there are lots of people who didn't raise their hands.
Yeah, yeah.
Raise it. So well, I heard that there were 4 endings. You wrote the ending 4 times.
Yeah, and that was in collaboration with our editors. So this wasn't just a collaboration between us. Both our respective editors tag-teamed as well. And, you know, they were just Andrew Eliopoulos and Donna Bray. They're both so brilliant. And, you know, they really guided us towards an ending that felt super true to the direction. It's sort of like Becky and I had put together a puzzle, and then we just got the last couple pieces wrong, you know? And they really helped us sort of like dig through like just like piles of puzzle pieces to like figure out like what was right. And first time I'm using that analogy, by the way, and it was pretty badass. But yeah, and we, you know, we love where it has landed, and it's stirred so many different reactions from readers. Like, the most memorable experience so far has been when our Danish publishers read the book for the first time, and one of our editors, he sent us an email that was like, oh my, I was bawling, my eyes are still swollen this morning, and the other editor, Kaya, was like, oh, this made my heart so happy, and we're like, did you read the same book? Like, and, but that's been a common theme from, you know, as far back as, like, readers who have had the advanced copies to this week with everyone finally getting their hands on the hardcover.
Yes, can you talk about the book tour? What's it been like? What's the reception been like? I know you started, you're going to hometowns of Arthur and Ben, or you've been there so far, so what was that like?
Yeah, it's for the most part, with one exception, in my hometown.
Yeah.
It's been absolutely wonderful. It has been busy and chaotic, and we like, if you see any pictures of us online where we look like we've been punched in the face, it's just like sleep deprivation.
Right.
Nobody actually punched us in the face on this tour.
We still have a few more days.
So far. So. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. But we're in a church, so I feel good about today.
Yeah. I feel safe right now. Yeah.
But like, I don't know if you want to talk about that experience, because I think, you know, to me, what happened to us in Milton, Georgia, in Arthur's hometown, you know, kind of underscores, you know, why these kinds of stories are still important.
Yeah, you know, it's the first time either of us have written a book that where it is just, like, from the cover alone, it is outright gay, you know? Like, it is just so clear that, like, these boys are, like, checking each other out. And yeah, so we're like, oh, this is, like, such a huge moment. And then we're launching the book for the very first time, and we're nearing the end of the signing, and a woman comes up to us, and she just sort of, like, Becky, Adam, you guys are so talented, and I just want to know, like, when are you going to write, like, a heterosexual couple or whatever? And mind you, like, Upside of Unrequited is a wonderful book that exists, you know? But, like...
She had it in her hands at the time, too. She had grabbed, like, 2 books as props, you know? So she wouldn't look, like, funny in the signing line.
Yeah. And then she was just, like... And I thought I, like, misunderstood the question because, like, surely no one would be that disrespectful. And it, like, to, like, ask a gay man to his face, like, when are you going to write straight? You know? It's just, like, and I was like, oh, well, you know, like, I'm going to keep writing queer people because, like, that's who I am. And she was just like, no, it's just, like, it's such a shame. Like, you're so talented. Like, I'm just wondering, like, maybe down the line. I was like, no, absolutely not. And, like, and it wasn't until Becky started kind of, like, combating her a little bit because she'd heard it for what it was that I was like, oh, no, this is legit. And then I was like, tell me to my face that, like, me and all the gay teens who are here tonight, like, don't deserve to see themselves in a book, you know? And she was still kind of, like, persistent, and eventually we kind of, like, we very much got her to leave. And it's really tragic, you know, because it's I'm so grateful that that experience happened, A, towards the end of the signing, and B, like, not during the Q&A portion, you know? Like, the last thing I would have wanted is for, like, teens to have, like, been in that room, you know, and hearing such ugliness. And, yeah, so, I mean, every time we talk about in publishing, like, oh, we've come so far, and it's like, you know, like, I mean, a woman snuck into our event to challenge us, and, yeah, and it's really disheartening, but then literally right after her, there was a man who had come out 30 years ago and had drove from Louisiana to Georgia for the event to tell us that he didn't have books like this when he was younger, you know? So that was an incredible experience.
Thank you. I'm curious if you had a favorite part to write while you were writing this book.
For me, it was all the joy, because I don't get to do that. Like, not at the volume that I got to do with this book, you know? And, yeah, like, it's nice to sort of, like, write a romance that doesn't have, like, death sort of lurking around the edges. And so, yeah, like, that made my heart really happy. Like, it may be one of the reasons why this was the easiest book that I've written, and not just because I only wrote half of it.
I'll go ahead and get specific, but I won't spoil anything. Yeah. But that way, if you've read it, I think for me, for this book, the most fun was it is a scene that takes place with the vocals of the Sims video game in the background. So,
oh, it's so great. Like, I was laughing so hard, like, when I read that scene for the first time. Like, it's just, yeah, the chattering, it's great. Okay, you will know what we're talking about when you get there.
How do you all know your ear for young people is spot? It's pitch perfect. Right? When I was reading it, I said, oh, these are kids I know. So I'm just curious, like, how?
I'm surprised, because Goodreads will tell you otherwise.
I don't care what they say. I don't care what Goodreads says. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah.
And the social media use also. Like, there's lots, it's just all of it. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, I mean, also, that was another thing. Like, the book was very, like, Facebook heavy, too, at one point, at least, like, in my sections. And our editors were like, teens aren't on Facebook. And I was like, yes, they are. And then I just started paying more and more. They're like, use Snapchat. I'm like, I'm a grown man. Like, I'm not going to catch me on Snapchat. Like, I have no interest in writing about Snapchat. I have no interest in, like even from, like, a research standpoint. Like, I have Instagram stories. That's it. That's life. Like, I'm set. But, yeah, I ended up, like, one day just sort of throwing in the towel and was like, I'm eliminating Facebook, and it's fine. Like, I want it to embrace more of the Instagram and Twitter, you know, platforms instead. But yeah, social media is just so, you know, like, I mean, our friendship developed over social media. You know, like, I mean, there are so many people in my life today who I would not be quite as tight with, I imagine, if it weren't for being able to develop that friendship online. So I just think it's such an important instrument to have present in the text.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just in general, you know, and not strictly social media here, but dialogue and just sort of trying to, like, capture teen voice. You know, one thing that I know is true for Adam, too, is we are always approaching this book as, you know, Ben's voice, Arthur's voice, these two particular characters. Like, there's never a moment when we are going through and we're like, let's make this sound more teen or something, because, like, I don't know, in my mind, there's not really, like, there's no such thing as just, like, a teen voice, you know, but these characters are teens, so I'm really glad, I'm really glad that they're reading as teens. But yeah, I think trying to be faithful to, like, who these particular characters are.
Yeah, we're not, like, trolling high schools and, like, eavesdropping on conversations, you know? It's just, yeah, it really is just true to who they are and their experiences that ultimately, like, inform their insights and their approaches.
That's great. I'm wondering, Adam, if you could talk a little bit about what I call the churros moment, where race comes up. Race is in the book, but it's not a book about race. So I'm wondering how you made those decisions.
Yeah, so it's the first time I'm sort of, like, actively writing about, like, being white passing, because it wasn't until post-2016 election that I sort of, like, came to grips with, like, the privilege that I'd had. Like, a really wonderful, brilliant editor, she's a woman of color, and, you know, I was asking her, like, how she's doing, like, post-election, like, with her family, and she's like, yeah, you know, like, we're making, you know, precautionary measures and da-da-da-da, and she was like, well, like, how are you doing? Like, I mean, she's like, you look white and you can present as straight. And I was like, what? Like, and honestly, like, I always thought, I was like, no, everyone knows I'm this, like, gay Puerto Rican, you know, and that was such an important moment for me. It was like I'd gone 26 years at that point just sort of, like, not having unpacked, like, how the world has genuinely viewed me, you know? Like, there are people probably in this room who did not know that I was Puerto Rican until I just, like, walked up and said it today. And, yeah, so, like, it's, you know, is it frustrating sometimes to have to, like, explain that to people? Sure. Is it the worst thing that, like, could happen? And, you know, like, have I really met a stream of obstructions in my life as a result? Of course not. You know, like, so I want to make sure that, like, I sort of, like, honor both sides in that, because it's like, look, it's not a right or wrong issue. Like, as humans, we're allowed to be multidimensional. Like, we're allowed to sort of, like, I mean, I grew up what felt like a very Puerto Rican upbringing, you know, and even though I don't speak Spanish, and which again, like, does not invalidate me as a Puerto Rican, right. But yeah, so I just sort of wanted to play at that, and I'm actually not sure that I was in position to dig quite as deeply, because again, it's still something I'm just beginning to process for the first time in the next couple of years, and I'll probably write another book about, you know, being a white passing Puerto Rican that will, as a result, like, dig a little deeper next time.
This sort of seems like a book match made in heaven. So I'm wondering if there were any parts of this process that were challenging for you two.
I think, you know, it's pretty amazing how few, like, major bumps there were in the road, especially, yeah, you know, I think there were so many moments where you would expect, or sometimes readers would expect, for our different styles, like, butt heads. But pretty early on in the process, like, we, you know, we've been really open with each other and just very, very committed to thinking of this as our book, and not stressing too much about, you know, like, do I need to hold back on, you know, some kind of, like, editorial comment that I would make, or, you know, tweaking some of the dialogue. And that, I mean, there are times, not only has Adam improved some of Ben's dialogue in my scenes, but there have been times when you have, like, out-Arthured me. You've been like, what if Arthur said this? And I'm like, you know our dude, like, you know him.
And, vice versa, where, like, I was having trouble finding Ben's voice, and then when Becky rewrote was originally the first chapter that I'd written from Ben's perspective, and we decided to have it from Arthur's POV, hearing Ben in her chapter helped me sort of like sharpen Ben's voice too. So it really, and I tell, you know, people ask like what advice would you give to anyone who wants to co-write? Like, make sure it's someone that you feel very comfortable with, that you can be honest with, because whatever you are doing, it has to be in service of the story, and not being afraid to sort of like shelter yourself in an effort to like protect like the friendship, you know?
Will you two write again together?
We have talked about it, but it's if it happens, it's one of those things where we have to sort of be in position to do it again, because we're already busy with like our next project. So, but we talked about this book for years, and then when our schedules lined up, we cranked it out, you know. So, yeah.
Well, is there a movie, or has there been talk of a movie from this book, about this book?
Yeah, What If It's Us was optioned for film recently by Brian Yorkie, who, you know, one of the reasons we're so excited about Brian Yorkie in particular is, so he adapted 13 Reasons Why, so we know he, you know, is very familiar with the YA space, but he also has, like, Broadway cred, which is, and Broadway is such an important part of this book.
Yeah. Like, he's a Pulitzer-winning playwright, like, for a previous Broadway show. And it's just, and we spoke with him and his team at Anonymous Content, and they were just, like, and we were, like, very protective of, like, these rights, because we know how these things go down. And we hung up, and we were like, that felt great, right? Like, we want to work with them, and, like, we're not just sort of, like, buying into it, right? And things are going well so far, so fingers crossed.
Yeah. Okay, excellent. Thank you. Thank you. We have a little bit of time now to ask questions, and what we would hope is that there are mics floating around, one question per person. And as you move to the mics, I just want to make a quick housekeeping announcement. Becky and Adam will be signing at the back of the church, and what we would like for you to do is to write your name on your phone or something where they can clearly see your name. Even if you might have met them before, please make sure your name is spelled clearly for them. They'll sign one copy of What If It's Us, and then one copy each of them from their backlist.
Yeah, sorry, just because like we have such a short window that we want to make sure that we're able to like get through everybody. So, sorry.
Okay. So, questions. If you have a question... Do we have Mike? Mike's coming.
So I actually come bearing a question from a student who doesn't know that I'm asking this question. I teach a social justice literature class in a high school, and all of my students are international students, which means that when we talk about racial issues and when we talk about gender and sexuality issues, there's a lot of cultural opinions, and my students bring stories of things that are said that are hurtful and things that are said that they don't know how to deal with, and they come and they ask me, what do you say when someone says something hurtful? What do you say when someone says something about being gay or about being black or about being trans or about anything? What do you say?
See.
And so I pose the question to you, if there is any recommendation you would make, what should you say?
For me, I've kind of developed such a thick skin over the years, too. And honestly, I'm just like, I'm so happy, like, being who I am. Like, and that's why it's like, if I had the opportunity for a do-over, it's like, oh, I would love to have been happier, like, 10 years sooner, you know? And yeah, like, my thing has always been to, like, find your people, whether they are in your community or whether they are just like incredible allies who you can change in front of and not feel judged or whatever, you know, like that has always, I only surround myself with people who I know 200% genuinely respect me. Like I have no time for people who are second guessing my value to them based on my identity.
Thank you. Next question. There's one beside you.
Okay. This is for Adam. Don't get me wrong, I do love your books, and even though they're very sad, and I like that, but you just mentioned that you like writing the happy parts, so, like, is there a reason that all of your books are sad?
Yeah. Great question. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, for me, I've always written from a place of therapy. So, like, whether it was sort of, like, confronting suicidal thoughts or whether it was confronting the thought of, like, losing someone who meant so much to me or, like, just sort of my own mortality, like, death has always been this thing that I've carried with me, having grown up in New York, 11 years old when 9/11 happened, and then 2 months later, losing my favorite uncle in a plane crash. Like, I learned very early on that, like, tragedy can just strike, and, you know, people who mean that much to you can just be gone, like, in an instant. So, yeah, like, all these ideas have just sort of been, like, floating around my head, and this is sort of my way of sort of, like, expelling them a little bit. Thank you.
Pick one. It's fine. Mm-hmm.
And then maybe over here next
right.
to
Right, oh, yeah, right. This side over there.
Hi. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're writing currently and what's coming next? Mm.
Unfortunately for me, I do have two projects that I'm working on. They're both YA contemporary, and I'm just not allowed to talk about them yet. I'm so sorry. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I have a fantasy that I'm also not allowed to talk about, but I'm going to talk about it. Because I'm me. Yeah, so I have a fantasy book that's coming out in January 2020. I know I've said fall 2019, but that is now a lie. It's about brothers, and it involves phoenixes, and it's super queer, and it's my return to sadness. So, yeah.
So, I came out when I was 19, and I'm currently celebrating my 20th birthday today here.
Happy birthday!
Oh my gosh, thank you! And a huge thing for me was reading They Both Die at the End and having Rufus be bisexual too. It was one of the first books I read after I came out, and I cried. And I was wondering what it's like for you knowing that you have these narratives that have such a large impact on people.
Holy S. Remember where I am. When I step out that door, though. thank you. Seriously. It's wild. To understand that, like, I didn't have, like, a huge relationship with reading when I was a kid. Like, I absorbed stories from movies and TV shows and video games, and I think that that is just as valid as reading books, too, and I don't think we necessarily always give that enough credit, but my relationship with books was that I would put something down, and I didn't really... it didn't have much of an impact on me, unless it was Harry Potter, you know? And it wasn't until I was 19 when I read Cassandra Clare's City of Bones that I saw a gay shadow hunter and a bisexual warlock, and I was like, yo, this is dope. And that was the first time that I found myself, like, able to care a little bit more, because I was like, oh, I didn't realize that I was allowed to be in a book, you know? That's when I finally started seeking out books that were either, like, contemporary novels about coming out or, like, more genre fiction that included queer characters. But I never actually thought that, like, my books would, like, have that power, you know? It's just incredibly grateful. The both of us, we've both had tons of teens this week coming up to us and adults telling us how our stories helped them come out. I hope that we can all just continue to help each other and pass the baton around.
Thank you both for just writing these amazing books. I mean, they're so amazing, and they just really inspire a lot of kids. Mom, I'm asexual. Okay. I just came out. Okay.
Oh my God, you're amazing.
Oh, she's awesome.
You're incredible.
Oh my gosh, that was yeah.
Oh, I'm like.
Can I say badass in here?
Yeah.
It's a chance. Go ahead.
I'm so happy for you. Yeah. I don't want to, like, keep the spotlight on you, but okay. You're incredible. And we're all just rooting for you. Yes. So thank you so much for being so vulnerable and sharing that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Maybe a question from the middle?
Yeah. And then over here.
And then over there. I took a wave.
So a while back, I saw a post online that really made me think a lot about my relationship with romance books like yours and just sort of romance stories in general. And the post asked a very sort of simple question. What would love and relationships be like if there were no love stories in the world? If there were no blueprints for how we were supposed to go about things, if it was just humans connecting with each other? And so as a gay man growing up, for instance, right, I didn't have the role models that a lot of my straight friends did for what relationships would look like. My parents were straight, all my relatives were straight. The only really place where I could learn about what queer relationships looked like or sort of start to feel comfortable with that idea was through fiction or through very heavily curated online profiles of people on social media and YouTube and stuff like that. So as authors who are writing to an audience that has no real, so as authors who are writing to an audience where many of your readers have no, like, real-life role models for what queer relationships look like, how do you sort of go about approaching things that are sort of maybe, I don't know, realistic or that make sense or that give people good ideas about what a relationship should be? Because if your only real understanding of what a queer relationship looks like comes from fiction, like, I don't know, how does that work, or how does that sort of come into your mind as you're writing stories like these?
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, you know, I don't ever want to see one version of what a romance should look like, right? Like, there isn't some, like, iconic, like, couple that we should all be paying attention to, you know? Like, we should be seeing so many varieties of queer romances, and because there are so many varieties of, like, queer communities, and yeah, so I mean, I write what is familiar to me and what I personally aspire to have, and I just sort of like hope that other writers will sort of like write their own, what they would love to see in their own lives and what they would love for teenagers to look up to.
All right, we have time for one more question. One more question, and then we'll go into book signing at the back of the church.
I'm going to say, if possible, if we can like end the note like on a "what if it's us" question.
Can you guys choose one person?
Or not. Oh, there's a hand. There's.
Oh, wow, she's got one. Yeah.
Hi, Adam and Becky.
Hi.
Congratulations. Hi. I wanted to ask, just to be clear, classic or vanilla Oreos? And do they appear in What If It's Us?
Wait, one more time?
Like the classic or vanilla Oreos, and do they appear in What If It's Us?
Oh, like what the characters would want?
Yeah. Oh.
So it's funny, we were asked this. I think Ben would like the birthday Oreos, because he is like, he has a little bit of like a sweet tooth, and he is very sentimental. So I'm very sentimental. I love a birthday. I celebrate my half birthday. I count down to my half birthday. Like, I'm an actual crazy person, and it's, yeah, so like that's Ben for you.
I'm going to answer differently than I did before, because I think, Arthur, mega stuff Oreos, like, yeah. The most, yeah. Extra,
so extra,
like too much. That's Arthur. So.
Cool, yay.
Yeah. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, folks, sorry, please join me in thanking Becky and Adam for joining us today. And if you have not yet read What If This Is Us, please read it and share it with someone and remind yourself why we need books like this in our world. Book signing in the back. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Yeah. For you.